Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. In this episode, I have Nick from Land Trust. This is that company you've been seeing ads for, and just a few things circling around. People kind of wondering what it is, what it's about. See some angry faces, emojis, even likes and things. But here we talk about what it is, what it's about, and some of their philosophies, and as well as just gaining some permission on private land. So it's a great episode with Nick. Land Trust mission is to exist to enable the enjoyment, profitability, and sustainability of America's undeveloped lands. And Nick's great guy, great to chat with, and they give a coupon code. So if you are interested in checking out Land Trust and want to book a hunt somewhere for a pretty affordable price, use promo code WHH15. That stands for Western Hunting Hub 15. WHH15, and I would assume that's 15% off. So that's a pretty good deal. I just might go look at that myself and see what I could look for down the road. So check that out while it's new. I bet you as things gain popularity, it's going to be a little more difficult to book some of those primo pieces of property. So great episode, give it a listen, and thanks as always for listening. All right, Nick, thanks for jumping on the Western Hunting Hub podcast. Appreciate you guys reaching out and then connecting, and you guys have, I've seen your ads all over the place. And it's got a lot of questions up in the air of what is this thing, and that happens always with new products, new features, new opportunities. What's this thing? Remember when people were saying what's OnX? What's now? If you don't know what that is, you're living under a rock, or go hunt. You don't. What's this thing? Glad we can chat about it, but I also want to talk about some how we get permissions, how you get permissions, how we can give some people, some folks, to not forget about private public land. And I'm going to hold myself on that. I got some opinions, I got some ideas, some thoughts, some questions. But if you wouldn't mind, real quick, introduce yourself, who you are, and what you're about. Not necessarily the company yet, but you yourself.
Yeah, sure. So appreciate you having me on the podcast, Clint. My name is Nick DeCastro. I'm the founder and CEO of Land Trust. I grew up, and your audience might shriek, but I grew up in Southern California. I was born at the beach and grew up surfing, spearfishing, fishing, hunting, all that stuff, which I know a lot of folks might think that you can't do that stuff there. It's harder now. I haven't lived there in probably 18 years, but grew up loving the outdoors. Grew up mainly bird hunting. So, you know, we have a lot of deserts in Southern California and a lot of quail and doves, and we get up to the Central Valley and pheasant and that kind of stuff, and do some chukar hunting too. So, yeah, grew up behind bird dogs and then got into fishing really early out in the ocean, spearfishing, and then fly fishing when I was probably in my probably 13 or something like that. Which, you know, fly fishing is what brought me up to Montana the first time. So we came up here a couple of times over the summer vacations when I was in school, and up in that Rock Creek kind of around Missoula, and just spent some weeks up here and fell in love with Montana, really. I went to school on the East Coast, lived in cities, sold technology. I was a sales guy before starting this company, and got to travel a bunch and worked in the marketing and advertising space, did a lot of social media advertising, worked with a lot of large companies doing that kind of stuff and helping them acquire customers online, which is a useful skill. And so, yeah, then I moved up here to Montana in 2016 and was sort of confronted with the idea that is now land trust.
I'm really thankful. So many different skill sets are bridging into the hunting world because we have to have that. Technology. I'm 6'6", so thankful when hunting companies started making clothes that fit me. I can't go to Cabela's and buy clothes. I can't go to I've never walked in an Old Navy and found a pair of pants. So just a pair of jeans. They don't make them that fit me.
Hey, you're going to the big and tall stores.
No, but that's big and tall. I got a 32 waist. You got to wear the tight, stiff as can be Wranglers. You know how many deer I've shot in tight, stiff Wranglers as a kid? Because that's all I could wear. But I'm so thankful for, you know, just joking. But the technology, the advancement, the hunting community needed it. And I don't know where we'd be without some of these other tech things that advance our ability to spend more time in the field, to create more opportunity, like any of this digital mapping, any of this, and what you guys have, which is a different thing. But I'm excited to talk about that. Like you to kind of give us a little brief and just on your style of hunting, because if you've been seeing land trust advertisements, it's private land, and you have the hashtag Why Hunt Private. What's your style? What are you looking forward to this fall or spring? And let's talk about your hunting.
Yeah. So like I said, I grew up bird hunting, a lot. Predominantly chasing California quail, which is an incredible game bird. Did a lot of chucker hunting too, which is like the, doll sheep hunting of bird hunting. You're usually like on the side of, a canyon, or, you know, it's steep and rocky and craggy. So love doing all that stuff here in Montana. Now I started big game hunting in Colorado when I lived there before moving here. I attempt to archery hunt. I still have never killed anything with my bow. So I like every kind of hunting and fishing I've ever tried. I'm less tribal when it comes to, you know, in the hunting community, we can be very tribal, and it's like, you know, bow versus gun, or, you know, no crossbow, whatever. I don't know. Every style of hunting I've done, I've enjoyed, and same thing with fishing. There's a time and place, I think, for all of it. I really like, you know, hunting deer and elk. I like to hunt with a rifle. I like to hunt with a bow. I need to get better at that because I've been unsuccessful to date.
Yeah.
But that's just me. It takes time, man. I mean, all your listeners know that. I have three daughters under the age of four, and I had this company.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I got to hunt, I don't know, 4 days this season. So, I don't get to hunt a lot, which is the irony of my position right now.
Sure. Well, I keep telling myself it's just because I have not that many young ones, but a 1 and a 5-year-old, and it's just the it's just the window in time where I've told my buddy who is out shed hunting all the time right now. I tell him, I said, I just got to be lame for a couple more years. I'm raising kids,
right. And then they'll get out there with you, hopefully. Yeah, you know? Like then they're then your buddies.
And then I tell them, it's like, I'm playing the long game here with the shed hunting. I'm raising where guys that I can cover more ground. So that's my strategy. I'm going to cover more ground because I got two little boys that are going to go right there with me, or you got girls that are going to jump in, and you're going to have all the hunting experience you want if they're interested. Whether absolutely. That's you pulling the trigger or not, because that's a fun thing to do. I don't know if you've taken them with you doing anything, but it's a riot.
So shed hunting is one of those activities I would love to get into. But again, if I get 4 days to go out, I'm going to use them wisely.
So
shed hunting looks like a lot of fun. And, you know, and again, as my daughter's, you know, my oldest she'll be 4 this summer. She is going to be a hunter. My middle, I don't know. But yeah, as she gets to that where she can get out there with me, and we're going to go morel mushroom hunting this weekend. And,
oh, nice.
You know, so she's getting that age where we can start to do some of those things. But yeah, in the last few years, there's not been a lot of hunting in my life.
Yeah. And so with that and the your coworkers, employees there at Land Trust, what are some techniques that you guys have used in the past? And if you're in Southern, we're in Southern California, permissions, I bet, I don't imagine there being a ton of public land. I'm not sure. And you're being in Montana now, you're surrounded by it. But what are some of those techniques you've seen in your circles work for gaining permission? And I can already see some things for you and I both with young kids as opportunities for gaining some permissions, to go.
Yeah. Cute little public. Kid.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? Shoot, let's back up even more. Private land versus public land hunting. I get to chat with biologists quite frequently, just in my full-time job. And here in South Dakota, we have a lot of private land, a ton of it. And I live back up out my back door is some public land. The Black Hills National Forest is right there.
Nice.
So I live in the area where there's a lot of public, but it's other than that, I'm not going to go hunt a muley in the hills here. It's mostly whitetail. And you can't draw those mule deer tags without 10 points or plus anyway. It's private land or going out into some of that more crowded public land out in the prairie. So I hear biologists talk all the time about don't forget about private. We have the, you see BHA, great organization, BHA with the public land owner. And it created a movement of you must hunt public to be a DIY awesome hunter. I know plenty of private land that is not easy to hunt. And it also holds some big deer and has some, or turkeys or whatever, and creates some opportunity. Yep. So I'm a fan of don't forget about private land. You got it to manage our wildlife effectively. We have to have hunters on our private land. And we can still do that today in a day. I've never paid for hunting. Yet in my life, I know at some point I probably will. Yep. I've never paid for permissions. So, I know that is coming and I know there's ways of knocking on doors and getting permission. So back to my original question, like, what do you guys see in your circles of great ways of finding permission?
Paid or not? I don't even like the private, the term versus.
True.
I think it's such a, why is it private versus public? It should be private and public, you know?
No, totally agree. I totally agree with you.
You know, it's just, and that's the way it's not you. I'm just saying that's the way it's framed a lot. I mean, most conversations, but you know, the funny thing is that 70% of the lower 48 is private. You know, out here in the West, we're like trust fund kids, man. Like we just like walk out and there's 50% of your state's public land, which is awesome. I mean, it's why a lot of people live here. A lot of hunters want to come and be in these places.
Yep.
So I want to be very clear that Land Trust and myself personally, we love public land. Public land is an amazing thing. I grew up hunting public land, and that was before it was public land. And for people who are not watching, I'm like saying it in quotes where it's this like hashtag and social media and like this. It was just like, I didn't even know that it was called public land. My dad would say, we can hunt here. You know, the concept of public land wasn't even a thing when I was growing up. Now I know that it was public land. So, you know, I grew up hunting public land, not because it was some badge of honor, but it's like we didn't own land and, you know, we would knock on doors too. And yeah, having a little cute little kid ask for permission to hunt is probably pretty good. Like I'll have a cute little daughter that, you know, probably send her up to the door a lot better than like a 6'3", you know, dude with a goatee and a gun or something.
Right. Don't say you're from Southern California.
No. I've lived out of California longer than I ever lived there. So I've crossed the threshold.
Right.
But anyways, so I just want to make sure that that's super clear. Like it shouldn't be private versus public. It's private and public. And we also have to acknowledge that probably 8 out of 10 hunters in the United States, licensed hunters, live in states with like less than 20% public lands. So most hunters don't even get to have this conversation. Kansas is 99% private. Nebraska is 97, 98% private. Texas is 96, 98% private. So a lot of states, and Texas has 1.2 million licensed hunters. So we just need to remember that, yes, while in the Rocky Mountain West, we are blessed with a bunch of public lands, that is not reality for most hunters. Like, Montana is unique, right? I mean, I'm sitting here in Bozeman. Montana has a really large megaphone in the hunting community because of Meat Eater and Onyx Maps and, you know, RMEF and VHA and, you know, Sitka and all these, like, big known brands. But I think it's important to remember, I think there's a lot of myopic perspective that comes out of Montana because we live in a state that's, like, whatever, 40% public. And it's a huge state and there's a shit ton of public land. It's important to remember that we represent like a teeny tiny percentage point of the actual hunters in the U.S. Like Pennsylvania has over 1 million licensed hunters. That's more people. Texas has 1.1 or 1.2. That's more than we have citizens in Montana. And so it's always important to remember, yes, we get to do some cool stuff like archery elk hunting on public land in the backcountry is a super cool activity to do. And it's something that's a bucket list item for a lot of people. But just because that's our everyday, that's the reality, and like that's where what we get to do a lot of, we need to make sure that we still understand that that's a very tiny percentage of people that get to do that, and that most hunters hunt whitetail on private land out of a tree stand. And that's cool. Sure. You know, like yeah. That shouldn't be looked down on, or, you know, it's like, hey, that's awesome. So I just wanted to set the table with that.
Right.
So, you know, as far as permissions, I mean, door knocking can still work, but I think that the reason I started this company is because door knocking has become less and less effective. And I don't think it's because there's more and more hunters. In fact, it's statistically provable that there's not more and more hunters. Some people out there might try to contend that there is, there are not. Hunting license sales data is publicly available since like back to 1950. Since 2000, hunting license sales have been very consistent. You know, 14.5 to 16 million every year. And that's sales, licenses and tags and stuff like that. So it's a provable thing that it's not like skyrocketed. What has happened is we've lost supply. So I have to pull the statistics, but I know we're losing like a few thousand acres a minute of production agriculture land to development. As you know, again, in the Midwest, ag land is hunting land. You know, so yeah. That's development is hunting's greatest and habitat and wildlife's greatest threat. It's not, you know, public versus private or any of these other dumb things that we spend a lot of time arguing about inside the hunting community. It is, oh, that farm is now a subdivision.
Yeah.
That farm is now a Dollar General. You know, so that is the
biggest threat. Removing the fence line to get another row of corn. Just that.
That's right.
Little bit of habitat that would have been great for the pheasants. I got a buddy in Iowa that posts things all the time driving. He's a hunter. And then he drives through and sees the CRP get mowed because it's a drought year.
Yep.
And double whammy on the pheasants and the quail over there. So, yeah.
So now you're touching on, you know, land trust facilitates access to private lands and you pay for that opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So you just touched on it there. Okay, so farms and ranches often sell because they can't pay taxes or it's just not penciling out. Like commodity ag production is a very low margin business. The average U.S. farm lost like $2,000 last year, like negative, right? So my perspective is we need to find every way humanly possible, the hunting community, the conservation community, to keep farms and ranches and agricultural lands profitable, because they will disappear if they're not profitable. It's just a fact of life. And so, yeah, taking that brushy edge to plant another row or two of corn, that's in the pursuit of making profit, hopefully make profit this year. So I can't blame them for that. But if we could place the profit incentive and add additional profit to a farm, ranch, or other undeveloped land, which is habitat, through having that habitat, like, hey, you know, you can actually make some money that goes to your bottom line by keeping, you know, it not doing that second or third row of corn that leaves a brushy edge, that leaves habitat, by, you know, not tilling every single piece of your property and leaving that woodline or, you know, those sloughs or whatever. And we can connect that. And to me, the biggest threat to hunting is loss of habitat to development. Like, dude, I live here in Bozeman. I live in what was a wheat field 5 years ago. Like, on Google Maps, when I first moved in, it was still a wheat field.
Oh, wow.
You try to get people to come to your house, and it's like the satellite imagery is still a wheat field. And so, I don't know about you, I have never seen land that got developed turned back into habitat. Like, I've never seen a subdivision, like, tilled under and, like, now it's back to working land. So that, to me, is the biggest threat to hunting, to access, to habitat, and to wildlife. And so all that is money. Like, got to boil it down. That farmer sold because guess what? Taxes are got higher and higher in a place like Bozeman. They have to pay property taxes, you know, commodity prices, input prices, diesel prices. It's just, it's a tough game to play. So, look, I'm for the free market. If a landowner wants to sell their property because they want to sell, I'm all for it. But a lot of the landowners that we work with who are multi-generation farm and ranch families, who they explicitly say, hey, we won't sell this place unless we literally cannot pay for it anymore. Those are the people we want to stay on that land because they don't look at it as simply a real estate asset. They look at it as legacy. And they've been there for 2, 3, 4, 5. I think our oldest is 6 generations in Nebraska that we have on our platform.
Oh, wow. Huh. So let's go into the background of land trust and explain what that is. Because as you're, I've got questions of leasing property, outfitting property, land trust. And I don't know if land trust goes, explain where we go in the, in the umbrellas though, kind of what makes sense, but, yeah. Where'd you come up with the idea maybe? And or how'd that start? And then kind of what is it?
Sure. That so you guys do? moved up to Montana in the end of 2016 and, you know, hunting public, hunting block, you know, block management is our, I don't know if you're probably familiar with it, our state, you know, paid hunting access program for private land, which is great. You know, there's a lot of myths out there and things that people project onto us. Like, we like block. I shot my antelope doe on block this last year. Like, block is great. We're not, you know, we don't hate block. We're not trying to kill it or anything like that. But anyways, I moved up here and found myself, you know, with less and less time. I often say I'm genuinely envious of the guys who get up to go and scout 30 days a year and hunt 45 days a year. Like, I'm truly envious of those guys. That's not the reality of my life now. Like I said, pre-kids, company, all this stuff. Like, I don't have that time. And so I wanted to find, there's a bunch of amazing private grounds in and around, you know, the Bozeman area. And door knocking is less and less effective because there's more and more, you know, the demand has stayed consistent. And as we just talked about, the supply of hunting land has diminished. And I would say the demand has actually increased in a place like Montana because of, you know, TV shows and technology like Onyx and all this. There's a lot of focus put on Montana specifically. And it's a bucket list place for people to come and hunt. So we have seen in Montana a lot more demand for, you know, hunting access, basically. So I think, you know, Onyx did a film on this a year or two ago where they talked to a rancher in the north end of the Bridges here outside of town. He's like, dude, I'll get 85 calls a weekend in season. Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
You know, who do I say yes to? Who do I say no to? Like, I still got a job and a family. Like, my phone rings off the hook. And that probably wasn't that way 15, 20 years ago. Right. I would bet it wasn't.
You know? Right.
So this is the reality. And so, yeah, door knocking is less effective because these ranchers and farmers are put in this impossible position of like, I guess I say yes to you and I say no to them for what? I don't know. And so that's really the impetus for founding the company was, hey, I was early on the Airbnb platform in New York City, which is a home sharing platform. I'm sure you guys are all familiar with Airbnb, VRBO, et cetera. And I saw the power of the sharing economy and marketplace models. And so to me, it was like, hey, this seems like an obvious marketplace issue. And maybe we can go and start getting access to more places. Yes, it's, you pay for it, to a lot more private land and open that up. And by the way, that was me looking at it from the hunter's perspective. But as we've got 4 years into this company, I've started to realize that, like, you know, these lands are so important. Basically, the conversation we just had of they've got to be profitable. They will be sold. They will be developed. And then no one hunts that land ever again. The habitat is gone forever. Species, you know, get pushed out of that. So that's what, you know, that's what basically drove me to start the business. You know, and the way we, you talk about kind of like leasing, outfitters, et cetera. So how we like to kind of position it to hunters is, hey, if you're looking for new, new opportunities on private land, you know, land trust makes it easy to connect directly with landowners and book hunts. And unlike expensive annual leases, which like I can't afford a lease, or guided hunts or door knocking, land trust makes it really easy to access private land to hunt. So a lot of people, we have a lot of people who use land trust in the same state. So, you know, Montana, for example, a lot of Montanans use land trust to go and hunt new properties in Montana, but we also facilitate a lot of, hunters hunting in new states. You know, I think I listened to your private land podcast you did a while back, and yeah, going to a new state, door knocking isn't really a reality for like if you wanted to go hunt in Missouri.
Yeah.
Right? You live in South Dakota. So you can do it, but you're probably only going to get what, 3 to 5 days to go down there, go drive down there. You end up eating a lot of your time door knocking in hopes.
Yeah.
Stressful. Like,
yeah.
Your hunting time is being used. Your PTO is being used. So, you know, or you could go on land trust and see like, oh, you know, Graham Farms. I could book this for a turkey hunt, which is where I went hunting this year. Amazing place. And, you know, for whatever, a few $100, you can go out there and like secure it. It's yours for the day, 3 days, whatever you want to book. Already talk to the landowner, get the lay of the land, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. So it makes it a lot easier and tenable for people to actually make those connections.
Okay. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Okay. Well, you listened to one episode that I didn't think was one of my better ones. But
it's a topic I'm interested in.
Yo, good. I gotcha. So the when I started seeing your ads and I see you got John Dudley working for you, not working for you, but
well,
doing
not working for
not
me.
Working yeah. for you, yeah. doing yeah. Promotional videos on yeah. Land Trust,
yeah. Yeah.
which is pretty cool to see a person of his stature in the community endorsing yeah. this. You see angry faces on the emojis, yeah. And it's kind of confused me because. Every Western hunter has one major complaint in common: crowding on public land.
Yeah,
crowding.
Yeah,
we're crowding. It's an orange army during the rifle seasons. It's yep. I go hike 10 miles. Not me. I go hike 10 miles back, yep. and there's still people.
There's other dudes there.
Yeah, and yeah. People are. I'm glad South Dakota's a little old school yet. You can still hike way back in there and there's not people because we've got our road yeah. hunters, but it'll get there. But Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, you go hiking in a ways.
Colorado's a mess.
Oh, it yeah. is. And I'm going there this year and I'm nervous.
Godspeed.
I'm nervous. Godspeed. They keep losing over-the-counter units and I'm nervous. But yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I know the area, so it should work.
Yeah.
But crowding is a issue, and
yes.
I'm glad you brought up hunter numbers and things because that's a whole nother conversation I've had recently, and yeah. I don't want to rehash that at this point. But it seems like, just bottom line, this is more access. More access, and maybe a solution to help with some of that crowding. And if you were to go online and Google turkey hunting outfitters, that's a horrible example because I'm not a turkey hunter. I don't really know the cost of that. Let's go with
I killed my first turkey in Missouri with Dudley, actually.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Super fun. But you can tell. Yeah.
I'm a deer hunter, and if I wanted to go on a deer hunt and I'm going to book something with an outfitter, what am I, $5,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000, depending on what they kind of guarantee-ish. Right. That's expensive. I kind of go and look and see, peruse it on your guys' website with like a turkey hunt. I think I saw one for $400 in Nebraska, something like that.
Yeah, and that's probably for a couple days.
Yeah.
That's for a few days.
Yeah. And I don't want a guide. I don't want to walk around with anybody. I've had those bad experiences deep sea fishing with guides. They're just doing stuff for you. Yeah. I want to go struggle. I want to go have the all of that. But back to my original question, what's the issue? What are the comments and why are they? Probably don't want to read too many comments, but what do people not like?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think first of all, the comments are for people who've never used the product. So we have 1,000 five-star reviews for both sides, landowners and sportsmen. So like if you were going to go buy a new bow, would you take people's feedback or perspective who have not owned and shot the bow? I wouldn't.
Right.
I would take the people who's like, hey, I bought this thing and I used it and I like it. Here's my feedback. So, you know, I would say start with that. Like, these are people who have actually never used the product or service and have no perspective other than, I heard somebody say this about this company and now I don't like it. And so I think there's just a lot of misunderstanding there.
Is it the idea, so, though?
Look,
is it more the idea?
Yeah, I think it's, which is funny. It's like, I certainly didn't, I can't take credit for the idea of paying for hunting access on private land.
Certainly. No.
people have been paying trespass fees, doing annual leases or multi-year leases, and purchasing land for hunting and other outdoor rec for a long time.
Paying for horses to come in and on public land, paying for a dog tracker.
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and there's this, I think there's a bit of that. And then there's also this idea that a landowner who, you know, starts listing on land trust, like, they somehow lost access to that land, which by definition, they're gaining access to that land. In most cases, I would say in all cases, the people who are upset have never spoken or would have ever met the landowner who listed on land trust and would have never had access, but now they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you pay them for the permission to go there, just like a trespass fee, and it's just access. You're not paying for wildlife. That's another one of the things, like, oh, this is not fitting in the North American model. No, that's actually not true. You still have to be a legally licensed hunter, hunting in legal season dates. You know, it's not like you book something on land trust and now you get to go kill 5 elk out of season.
Right.
No, you have to draw your tag. You have to hunt during season. Like, it's still being regulated and mandated by state fish and wildlife departments. And you're not paying for outcome. You are paying for access to a place to do an activity. And I think we often say this, you mentioned outfitters. And by the way, we're very neutral with outfitters. There's good ones and there's terrible ones. And they're a service provider and they serve a purpose for sure. Because there are people who do want to go and have that higher level of service. And just like Airbnb didn't kill high-end hotels, like, land trust won't kill outfitters. Like, there's always going to be clientele who want you to pack them in and to do camp and to cook and to guide and do all that stuff. And that's great. But
that's a good analogy.
You know, there are, yeah, I mean, there's room for both, right? And just like on Airbnb where you could book a $20 a night hostel or a $2,000 a night, you know, castle, land trust has everything from, you know, $15 a day to go shoot gophers to, you know, big expensive elk hunts, you know? So that's just, it's a marketplace. But I think there's a lot of misunderstanding there. And I would just say that it comes from people who have not actually used us and actually seen the opportunity. And we absolutely are a huge net gain in access. And back to your point on crowding, hunting is a zero-sum game. You know, I grew up surfing. Surfing a break by yourself is very different experience than surfing it with 50 other dudes. And same thing with hunting. Hunting, you know, 50 acres, 100 acres, 200 acres by yourself is a very different experience than hunting with 20 other dudes or gals. And so more private land hunting is better for the public land hunter for two reasons. One, every day that someone is hunting private, whether it be through us or gaining permission or whatever other vehicle they got out there, that is a day that that hunter is not on public by definition. So it's one less person on your public spot. Two, and this has been backed up by science, more private hunting pushes animals around to public. The state of Utah had a lot of upset people back in like 2016 because they were selling a lot of elk tags, and people were just like, dude, there's no elk on public land during rifle season. So why are you selling all these tags? So they tested, I think in 2017, you know, starting to issue some private land tags. And lo and behold, if you put pressure on elk on private land, they will move, you know? So it went from like 24% of the herd being on public during the middle of rifle season to like 45%, almost like double. And that's just common sense, right? Hey, you put pressure on animals, they will move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating to kind of compare that crowding solution to wildlife management to access. Yep. It's just a nice little group of things all working together there. I was just perusing. That's why I can't talk and look at the same time because I was just looking at a ranch as I'm listening. Looking at a ranch to see it at the options, and man, get a prairie dog landowner in South Dakota. For sure.
we got some in southeastern, like Ekalaka and stuff. So we got some stuff coming close to you over there.
I saw in that Ekalaka area, there seemed to be a few little flag things, drop points, whatever, waypoints. The Hunter Peruse is a website. Find something they like. They want to go on a deer hunt. Walk me through the process of what that is and how do they. I work with a lot of new hunters and women hunters, and if they walking up to someone they don't know and going to hunt or even ask for permission or going to hunt on their property or hunt with somebody is a very intimidating thing for them.
Oh yeah.
So
in public is the most intimidating thing.
I get that too. Get that too. So I'm really curious. I've got 1,000 questions on this of what you do to vet landowners. How do you know they just don't want a nice check and it's like grazed down flat prairie with one antelope on it? And what's a hunter's process to go through? So maybe just start with the hunter's process to go through this step. What are they?
Yes. Well, let me start with landowners because I think that's it's a good question. So The majority of, we have about 1.25 million acres on the platform today across 30-something states. We're heavily concentrated in like Montana, Nebraska, Kansas. We're getting into Missouri, North Dakota. We're opening a bunch of new states. But our landowners are predominantly owner-operator, meaning they live and work on the land, farm and ranchers. So these people are growing food for commodity production. This is not like a hobby farm or a hobby ranch. And they're usually 2, 3, 4, 5 generations on that land. So we go out often, you know, in the states that we're focused on, we have people who are on the ground. We call them landowner success managers. And when the landowner says, hey, I'm interested, they go out and visit with them. They go out and see the property. They take photos. They do all the GPS maps. So, like, we work with HuntWise and Onyx, and we'll build GPS maps. And, you know, here are the property boundaries, no-go zones. Here's where you park, and here's where the – if it's tree stands or whatever, right? Just get you oriented to it. And they get to see the property themselves. So we have eyes on almost all of our properties in those states. And you know, as opposed to an outfitter, and again, we're not against outfitters, but as opposed to an outfitter whose business is running people through a property, this is not a landowner's business. Their primary business is growing food, growing cattle, growing corn, you know, like commodity ag production. They also live there. So, you know, in that case, they are not trying to run like 150 hunters through a property in a season. They want to provide good experiences. And they also have been there for many years. They understand what populations look like. We hear this year, like Nebraska and Kansas, holy smokes, a lot of drought. We had people making inquiries for turkey hunts, and landowners just saying, hey, look, we've had a drought. You know, the turkey numbers are super down. We're not doing any hunts this year. So they're saying that kind of stuff. And they're managing already, like they understand, because they've lived there for a long time, that, hey, we want to let stuff rest. It's just not a good year for it. So they're actively turning down potential income, because they know that this is not the right time to hunt. Populations are down and all that stuff. So just to give your audience an idea about the types of landowners we have, and these are generally like honest, hardworking handshake people, right? So on the hunter side, you go to Landtrust.com, you search by state you're interested in or species you're interested in, and then you see a bunch of different, you know, listings and packages there. So it could be like a 3-day mule deer hunt in eastern Montana with lodging. So, you know, it's offered by a family out there. You can come out to their ranch, and it's your ranch. I want to make it clear, like when you book something with Landtrust, you are the only group out there for that time. So it's not
good to know.
It's yours.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's about exclusive access for the time, for the duration of your booking. I mean, shoot, we have some ranches that are, we had a 45,000 acre ranch. Like, you could book it and just have it to yourself for a day or a week or whatever. And then it's DIY. So it's essentially a trespass fee. You're getting permission to go out and hunt that, you know, species of animal and stay in that lodging if it has lodging. And so you find some packages that you like, you can message with the landowners. So this is like digital door knocking. And so you can message the landowners. We have a bunch of information on, you know, we have the game management units, photos, acreage. You know, we have a map that shows you roughly where it is, reviews of people who've gone there and you know, hunted and stayed there before. And then, you can message the landowners, ask them any questions you might have, because obviously you have questions. And then if it all works out, you make a booking request with a credit card and the landowner accepts it. We send you over digital maps after the booking has been accepted. We obviously want to protect people's privacy. So, so after you know, that landowner says yes, we send over Onyx and Huntwise maps of the property, arrival instructions, all that stuff. And you can connect with the landowner and you show up and go have a good time.
Hmm. How does, I'm sure this has come up, but how do we keep those properties, or the landowner keep those properties from getting over hunted? Because he says, oh, $400-$500 a day. Let's get someone in here every day of the season. How do you maintain quality or not?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, no. So the profit incentive keeps things aligned. Mm-hmm. So the recreation as an asset, or a new line item for these operations, these, you know, cattle and farm operations. Yeah, you could theoretically just go and hunt everything out in one year and make some money. But guess what? Then you don't have that revenue stream for the next year and the next year and the next year. And so that goes back to me talking about, one, the fact that these folks live here and on these places and they have for generations. They've seen the ebbs and flows of healthy habitat and wildlife and all this stuff. And we constantly see landowners saying, hey, we're not taking any hunters right now because mule deer population is down, or, you know, we've had drought and there's not as many turkeys, or whatever it might be. So it's in their best interest and our best interest as a partner, business partner with them, that they maintain high quality experiences. And on the, you know, if you have a landowner who doesn't maybe understand that, there's ratings. So you'll go on, if you sound the interest, there's things. So after every booking, the landowner gets to rate the guest, and the guest gets to rate the landowner and the experience.
Right.
So you'll start to see those ratings show up real fast. And then they're not going to get bookings.
Yeah.
So this is why marketplaces are really good at transparency and trust and accountability.
Got it. I guess you answered that question about what the hunter gets, but they get the digital map, they get directions. Do they ever meet the landowner? Is that a common thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, most of our landowners, again, because they live there, and it's not universal. Like, we do have landowners who are absentee, but most of our landowners actually live and work on those properties. So most of our landowners, absolutely, they'll get to meet them. But it's up to the landowner how they want to do it. We have some landowners that are busy, and they're just like, hey, we use land trust, we're comfortable with it, and, you know, go have fun. But most of our landowners will go and meet with the folks, and they will obviously talk to them on the phone and help answer any questions they might have.
How are new properties advertised then? Because I was just looking at it's almost like I don't even want to say. I was looking at a deer hunt in Kansas, I see the price tag on it, and I say, if I draw a Kansas tag, or I'm going to Nebraska this year. You don't have any in the area that I was wanting to go, but close to.
We got about 250,000 acres in the Sandhills, and the Sandhills are amazing.
That's in Valentine?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we have some.
I think I was looking at that
one
too.
If your guests haven't been to the Sandhills in Nebraska, what a cool ecosystem!
Oh, I know. I've been wanting to hunt that area for so long. I used to live in Colorado, and I drive from there to my parents in eastern South Dakota. And everyone complains, "Oh, you got to drive through Nebraska." It's like, are you kidding me? You see that
incredible
country?
Yeah,
I want to hunt incredible. I want to hunt that.
Well, now you know land trust.
Yeah,
you can.
So I was looking at that, and Kansas is in the future. Kansas is kind of blowing up with popularity for sure. For white and the Western hunters are Western hunters are moving east, and Eastern hunters are moving west to hunt, and vice versa.
Hunters want to always just do new things. They want to experience new things.
Absolutely,
new hunts. Yeah.
And so I see that property on here. If you get a new property, are you advertising that as a, hey, just picked up 10,000 acres or how is that getting distributed with, and I suppose the best thing about this is that you're not inundating a landowner with crazy communication. It's all going through you guys.
Exactly. So we're not publishing their phone numbers or anything like that. Right. No, everything comes through here. And so it's a good question. So I would say create your free account. I'm talking to you specifically, Clint.
Yeah.
It's free to create an account on Land Trust. When you sign up, you tell us, hey, I live in South Dakota or whatever state you live in. I'm interested in these states that I want to hunt. I'm interested in these species that I want to hunt. And so once you tell us those things, if you told us, hey, I live in South Dakota, but I'm interested in Kansas and I'm interested in whitetails, when we get Kansas or whitetail properties, or Kansas and whitetail properties, we're going to email that to you as soon as these listings come live. So, you know, like it's in our best interest to let people who told us they want to hunt Kansas whitetails, to let them know we just got a new Kansas whitetail property. And so then you can go see it. If it looks like something you're interested in, you go and make an inquiry with the landowner. And, you know, if everything sounds good to you and them, you book it.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you and your listeners, even if you're not actively looking for a hunt, create your free account. Tell us what you're interested in, and then we'll just send you emails about stuff that you're interested in.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm interested in Texas hog hunting. I've never hog hunted, and we're about to put on a bunch of ground in Texas. And so, you know, I'm very excited about
it. Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys have to have a license to, like, I know when money exchanges like this, and I suppose landowners don't have to have an outfitter license to take on trespassing fees, but maybe it's different state to state. Do you have to get licensed anywhere? Or are there any states that you're just, I can't do business, it's not going to work?
No, we haven't seen any of those states yet. This is facilitating access to private land. And again, we're not just doing hunting. I mean, people are booking foraging for morels. People are
about to do
the RV stuff. So it's just access for private land to do outdoor activities. So not a hunting company per se. Hunting is the core activity we focused on to date. We love it. Everyone here, you know, hunts. So no, we're not, and we're not outfitting. It's just, we're facilitating a marketplace for land access. So, and our landowners, yeah, they're not guides. They're not outfitters. Hey, look, over a cup of coffee in the morning and say, hey, we usually see, they like to be over there and, they like to be over there. We see them over here sometimes. They're giving you like a lay of the land, but they're not guiding you or anything like that. And that's, occasionally. So, and then everything, look, we use all the modern technology. So Stripe, if you know, are familiar with Stripe, they're $50 billion payments company. So when you go to book something, it's all on a credit card. You pay 100% up front. We hold it in escrow until the trip happens to make sure that everyone's being honest and everything happens. At the end of the trip, we direct deposit it to the landowner's account. And then you guys rate each other in the experience. And I think on that point, we are very clear with the type of people that that really enjoy using land trust. It's about experiences and not outcomes. If Clint, if you're like, dude, I wanted to hunt Kansas and kill a 200-inch, whitetail or mule deer, and I'm not going to be happy unless I do, don't use land trust. Like, hire an outfitter.
Right.
Like, go down there, get an outfitter, get a guide. Like, that's it. And I'm not saying anything negative. I want to kill a big deer too. So if that's what your goal is, then you should hire a guide or outfitter because that's very outcome oriented. We are for people who want to go to new places with some friends or family or by themselves and have some new experiences and create lasting memories around hunting. And like, again, I was down there with Dudley in Missouri on a beautiful farm. Yeah, I killed my first bird. It was super fun. But we got to fish during the day. We barbecued at night. The landowner came out and brought us steaks that he's growing there on the property. Like, honestly, that's like the type of experience that is awesome. If I didn't kill a bird, whatever. There was a lot of birds there. So I just want to be very clear that if you're not going to be a happy customer unless you kill that big animal, we're not for you. Like, do we have properties that you could kill a 200-inch deer on? Absolutely. But it's about, I need you to be experience oriented rather than just like outcome or I'm unhappy.
Yeah. Yeah. I did see on there about they provide lodging or do a lot of them just like park your camper here, pitch a tent here.
Yep.
Is that a majority of them or just some?
So yeah, it's a good question. So there, land trust is about land sharing. So the land and the resources of the land are the most important thing. So some of our properties don't have lodging right now. And then a lot of them do have lodging, and lodging could be anything from you can pitch a tent here, you could bring your camper trailer here, to we've got a bunkhouse, we've got a full on, house and beautiful lodging for you. So a lot of our properties do have lodging, and a lot of them will say, yes, you can come, pitch a tent or camp or RV here.
Do you ever encourage the hunters or the, let's just say recreators, because it's bird watchers as well.
Yeah.
I saw that.
RVers, whatever,
Do you encourage them to leave some sort of thank you or like, because normally you go on someone's property and there's always a handshake at the end and maybe a case of beer later on and you drive by or a thank you card with a gift card or something like that. Is that something that typically you've seen hunters do or hear from landowners or the ethics on that one
of for sure. Do it or not. I would like to say that, we've been bad at this in the past. We're starting to get good at it now. You read the reviews that landowners give their guests. 99% five-star reviews since the beginning of the company, which if you looked at the historical hunter landowner relationship, it probably wasn't 99% five stars.
No.
So, we've done a good job at facilitating the connection of really respectful sportsmen with landowners. And we're starting to publish a lot more reviews that the landowners give, and they always are touting how respectful and courteous and, kind and communicative the guests are, the hunters. And so honestly, the review, that's the place where we see a lot of that thank you. Like the handwritten card is now kind of a review. And guess what? That positive review helps that landowner, continue this, this business for them. And so, and of course, personal connections are made. We just saw yesterday a guy booked an incredible turkey hunting property in Nebraska. Like, the game cameras are insane. He booked this year for the season, had a great time, just booked next year for his family, and like they know each other. And so, you know, we absolutely see these connections facilitated, and, you know, I'm sure there are people that stop by because a lot of locals use it for local spots too. Yeah. And so we see, you know, people booking the same place over and over again, and the landowners know them. And yeah, I'm sure there are those traditional courtesies and stuff, but it's not something that we encourage. Hey, you paid for the access, and the landowner, that's their price. So they're appreciative of that. And you use the review process to really, you know, say thank you and all that stuff.
Okay, so my question is hard to get tags. So in the Sand Hills of Nebraska, you can't just buy a tag this year. I don't believe so.
Oh, yeah, you can for muleys.
But is that really? Like in that Northwest?
Nebraska, over-the-counter mule deer tags for rifle. No, there's a quota.
Right. Okay, okay.
But you can just buy them until they sell out.
Okay, I'm new to, I haven't hunted Nebraska yet, but so bad example, but take one area where you can't draw a tag necessarily. Maybe it takes one, two, or maybe it takes 10 years. So booking those makes it difficult. It's a 50% draw, so I booked it, but didn't draw this year. How do you navigate that?
So we've been toying with this, and this is, you know, hunting was like the hardest activity to start with, because like every state has their regulations, tags, GMUs, like it's the hardest thing to do. Everything else is easy, relatively speaking. So we've been toying with this idea of tag insurance, because people want to get their stuff locked in and like, hey, I feel pretty confident I'm going to draw. But if I don't, I obviously don't want to end up losing the money that I spent for a booking. So we've toyed around with it in some general units in Montana, like for non-res. And so like, hey, I'm non-resident. I want to do, you know, an elk hunt this year, because we feel very confident that we can get that general elk hunt rebooked, like, you know, from other people. So we're toying with this, and we're probably going to productize it a little bit more of this tag insurance. So, hey, I know that haven't drawn yet, but I would like to lock this place in. And if I don't, I can get reimbursed, you know, whatever. And you it's like trip insurance on buying a flight to Europe or something. Yeah. So we're probably going to productize that in the near future to help with that, alleviate some of that anxiety.
Hmm. Yeah. I wonder, just dumb idea, great idea, not at all. Maybe I wonder if partnering with a Hunt and Fool or something like that to be able to utilize those resources to help people know if they're going to be able to draw something. Cause man, I talked.
Yeah, Lorenzo at Go Hunt's a great guy. We're going to do stuff with them. They're just very busy this year. But on a lot of our listings will tell you like, hey, this is the GMU. This is them. So if you look at like a Montana mule deer hunt, you'll see the GMU, which is nice, just so you know that. Yeah. We have links to the actual like state stuff. And then we also do pull some of the stuff out of that page in like HuntWise Go Hunt. Mm-hmm. And we'll say like, hey, if you're non-res, you have this much chance.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We do pull some of that out. We don't pull all of it, obviously.
Sure.
Your product and service. I want to make sure we respect that. But we do give some of that.
Yeah, because there's some...
I'd love to have an integration with Go Hunt, though, and like just pull their...
Oh, yeah.
App into our page, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's plenty of real smart hunters, and there's plenty of dummies that don't have a clue what they're applying for.
Oh, we got people who like go to make a booking request for like an elk hunt in the summer, and you're like, can't elk in the summer, you know? So it's in our best interest as the landowner's business partner to make sure we streamline all of that stuff, because we don't want people making inquiries for a super hard to draw tag. Who have no points, and it's just like wasted interaction. It's a waste of time for them. So we're very aligned to make sure we make it as easy as humanly possible. And we have, if you look at the bottom of our, if you go to LandTrust and look at the homepage and go scroll all the way to the bottom, we have GMU pages for different species.
Oh, okay.
And so now you can kind of sort by the game management unit that you're looking for. And if we have properties there, you'll see them.
Okay. Yeah, I'll dig around on that.
So, hey, there's all, look, man, we're still a young company.
Oh, yeah.
The product still has a long way to go, but we're working on it.
Well, I'm really interested to dig a little more now that I kind of got some of this background and understanding of that to see what those options are.
Tell us what you like.
No, I will. I absolutely will.
Yeah. You can also favorite when you see properties you like, so you don't lose track of them. There's a little favorite heart, so it'll like keep them on your home screen and you'll be able to come back to them.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that.
Yeah.
But let's, I want to be respectful of your time and let's wrap it up. And,
sure.
Thank you so much for, I always go into interviews with thinking I want to hear one thing and then I learn something completely different just and have great conversation about public versus access or public and private.
There we go. Public and private. I would like to get to that point.
Hearing and having discussions on stuff like that is so much more valuable to me than where my superficial brain was thinking initially. So I like having conversations like that and chatting about it. But share again for me or share social media and the website and anywhere we can besides our free account, which is easy to go set up. So share what you like.
Yeah, so landtrust.com is where is the site, and you can go and see, browse all of, you know, that's the whole point is the website. You don't need to know us. You can go browse there and connect directly with landowners and properties that you're interested in. So landtrust.com is where you can do that. By the way, you can text or call us. We pride ourselves on customer service. So you text us or you call us, somebody here in Bozeman is going to answer the phone and help guide you through it. So whether it's, you know, hey, I'm interested in maybe getting out to do Montana mule deer hunt or something, we can help you through it. Or if you got some working through the product, if you like to text, we text all day, every day with different customers. So we're very service oriented. And then on Instagram, I think it's landtrust_hunt. You can follow us there. And the phone number, if people just want to go to that, let me see here. I think it's 406-709-8450. And, you know, if you're an interested landowner or if you're an interested sportsman and you just want to give us a call or text us, you know, you can do that. And I'll leave you kind of with a thought. The future of hunting is going to require all types of access. Obviously, federal, you know, public lands are amazing. They're free. They're, you know, we want to make sure that we don't lose hunting access to federal public lands, which is in some states, in some cases, under a little bit of a threat right now. So from federal public lands to state lands, BLM, all that stuff is awesome, to door knocking, to state funded, programs like WEHA in Kansas or block management here, those are all great to what we facilitate. It's going to take all kinds of access, and I don't think any one of them is better than the other. They all have their place. It's a spectrum, and we need all of them to make sure that hunting continues as a pastime.
Excellent. Couldn't agree more. But it ain't my ground. This is God's country.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude.
Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.